ebook publishers and marketing services company Just Imagine It, Inc. presents Get Behind Me, Now Stay There, a new fun-filled, informative podcast available on iTunes and right here locally on KSKQ Ashland, Oregon, 89.5 FM. Art and entertainment news and views. Today's podcast is brought to you by the fine folks at Downpour.com, the one stop for all your audio and digital book needs. Join the Downpour Audiobook Club and save up to 50% on digital downloads, exclusive member-only deals and promotions with no commitment, and you can cancel at any time. Only $14.99 per month, that's Downpour.com. On this episode, Chrissy McIntyre tells us about her upcoming off-Broadway production, and we feature the audiobook on Stranger Tides right after the news you want to know. This girl is on fire! This girl is on fire! She's walking on fire! This girl is on fire! Looks like a girl, but she's a flame. So bright she can burn your eyes. Better look the other way. Hello, I'm Cyrus Simerson, and we're featuring a special news and views from New York City with Charlie Stanton and Chrissy McIntyre on today's show. What's happening in the Big Apple after the Sandy hurricane?
Hey, Chrissy.
Hey, there you are.
There I am. There I be.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
What's going on out there in the Eastern Seaboard? I gotta tell you, you guys got a lot of things going on there. How you doing, Chrissy?
Hey, good. Thanks, Charlie. How are you?
I'm unbelievable. Unbelievable. It's Christmas time. What else?
I know, exactly. Hey, well, it's exciting news for us podcasters. MTV is going to launch a new talk show this fall starring comedians Nikki Glaser and Sarah Schaefer. And they're the hosts of a very successful podcast called You Had to Be There, and it features the two women chatting about the perils of everyday life with each other and usually a guest, somebody from the world of comedy. Normally they are two comedians after all, but unlike the podcast, the show that they're going to do for MTV is going to feature the duo in comedy sketches, performing pre-written jokes, and conducting probably a little bit more traditional interviews. And Glaser and Schaefer, who both tour the country performing stand-up comedy, began recording the podcast in Schaefer's Brooklyn apartment after they met in 2010. So they're just in their apartment in Brooklyn recording. But soon, the pair will move from Clinton Hill to Times Square, where their new show will be filmed in the former Total Request Live studio. Do you remember that from the TV show with Carson Daly? And they're actually going to be looking out onto Times Square if they... if it's still the same kind of setup. I don't know if you've ever seen that, Charlie.
Yeah, no, I have.
So that would be really exciting. I mean, to have it, you know, doing their show kind of in front of an audience, basically in Times Square.
It seems to be the motif, you know, with the, you see it on Good Morning America, you see it on all the reality shows.
Yeah.
It's kind of, you know, get everybody involved in it type of thing.
There's something about people screaming in the background that really adds to a show.
Yeah, I guess.
All the fans outside with their signs and screaming. So Schaefer told the Huffington Post, "I'm beyond excited. I think what I'm most excited about is getting to work every day with my bestie, Nikki, and bring our vibe to the MTV audience." She said, "My earliest memory of watching television was MTV, and I can't believe I get to be part of it now," which is pretty exciting because that's pretty much my first memory of television of cable.
MTV?
Yeah. Not television, but cable. Just watching cable. It was like, that's all I ever watched was MTV.
Yeah, that's when they showed music videos?
Yeah. That's when, when we actually could watch music on MTV.
Yeah.
So their show is going to be called The Nikki and Sarah Show, and it's the latest entry in this trend of comedy podcasts becoming television shows, which is very exciting considering we are in the podcasting business. Comedy Bang Bang.
We
I don't
are.
Know if you've ever seen that show?
No, I have not seen that.
That is a. I've watched that. That is. It's quite a wacky show, but it's very funny. But it's really out there, and it's on IFC. And I like it. And they always have some, you know, like fabulous guests, which is always quite, it's kind of a hook, really. You know, you get Amy Poehler to sit on the couch with you.
Oh, you know what? I have seen that.
Yeah.
That is really, really cool.
Yeah, it's really cool, but weird, you know? Like, you watch it and you think, this is the show. This is actually on television. They're really kind of breaking boundaries, which is good. And the other one that recently became a TV show was The Nerdist. Have you ever seen that? It's Chris Hardwick and his gang of nerds, and they talk about Battlestar Galactica and Star Wars and...
no, but I'm sure they have a huge audience. Just mentioning that.
Anything, if Joss Whedon is involved, who did the Serenity movie and Firefly and God, Buffy the Vampire and all that kind of stuff, anything Joss Whedon, they talk about that at length. So if you like that kind of stuff, you'll probably love The Nerdist show because it's right up their alley. So.
Okay. I'll have to give that a look.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very interesting. I mean, I'm not into those kind of things at all, but they really make it fun. Like, you almost kind of want to start watching because you're like, wow, I guess it's a good show after all, you know.
Well, you know, I have heard You Had to Be There, the podcast. As a matter of fact,
you know,
I have. I've heard it several times.
Yeah. What do you think?
Well, they're going to have to tone it down for TV.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
A lot of salty language in that show.
Oh, yes. Is there ever... Yeah, it's almost like, you know, when the first time I heard it, and I heard one of the original shows, mm-hmm. It was just like they say it was. It was them, you know, in their apartment in Brooklyn.
Right.
And they had like three or four people in their audience, they called it.
Oh.
Yeah. They go out in the audience, we got three or four people, you know, and they didn't say three or four people, out in the audience
right.
Today. You know,
their
and
friends that they bribed with beer and pizza, like copy in our living room.
Exactly. I mean, you know, because like one of them, like Sarah, was going, you know, and you know, for our audience out there, and then the other one, Nikki, would go, come on, you know, it's just our pals. We gave him some beer, you know. And they came up here, and they said, you know, on our show today, we're going to have Chrissy McIntyre, and then their friends would go, yay, and they go a little louder, you know, and that's how they got started, man, and they did it weekly.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did it. You know, they had a new show every week,
mm-hmm.
and I remember them talking and them saying that you know, their goal was to get to 100,000 downloads a week.
Okay.
Right?
Wow. That's a good goal.
And, yeah, and so they reached that by their 25th show, and then they became like number one on iTunes. You know, because they're funny. But here's the thing that they don't tell you. You know, is when you listen to the podcast, they don't tell you they're professional comedians.
No.
Yeah, Sarah Schaefer is she's a pretty funny stand-up comedian. You know,
okay.
She's been in like all these different shows, Last Comic Standing, stuff like that. And the other one, Nikki Glaser, I don't know too much about her act or what she does, but I know that she has one, and she was a writer for Jimmy Fallon.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And she left.
They all are doing these things, you know. They all have like these little side jobs that all of a sudden, like, oh wow, you were involved in that, and you were involved in that. Oh, okay.
Yeah, and so you listen to their show, and they usually have, you know, like friends, a musical guest on, or a comedian that they know,
mm-hmm.
and it's never, you know, like Russell Brand's on this week, you know.
Right.
But the thing that makes their show so good is that. You know, it's so spontaneous, and it's right there, and they still, to this day, continue to do it in their apartment.
Yeah.
And then it got so big that they took it on a road. They went out to San Francisco, and they went to down to Miami, and, you know, they would play colleges.
Yeah, that's a real popular trend with podcasts, is going out and doing live shows. They, you know, they sell out these little theaters.
All right, talk to you soon. All right,
bye-bye.
And that's your art and entertainment news. Keep listening for Blackstone's special feature.
Lights go down,
Chrissy McIntyre's new play, has proved that it's a pirate's life for me. She talked with the cast of her production in this interview.
Welcome to another exciting edition of Get Behind Me, Now Stay There. I'm Chrissy McIntyre, and I'm here with the crew behind the show called Arr! A very British pantomime, which is going to be held at the Bergdorf Cultural Center for the Arts in Maplewood, New Jersey, this January. And I'm here with Gareth Jones, Liz Jones, Ridley McIntyre.
Hello.
So I guess we should start with, what is a British pantomime? We're not miming here. There's no Marcel Marceau involved, right?
Well, I don't think there'd be much point in a radio mime show.
Oh, there might be. You never know.
Okay, can you see what I'm doing now?
It's fascinating. Gareth is trying to get out of a box. He feels like he's trapped. There's no way out.
Now he's taking off his trousers.
Oh dear.
So moving on.
It's quickly. Got
a pantomime, a British pantomime is not a pantomime, it's not a mime. I have absolutely no idea why it's called a pantomime. It's a traditional name for a show which grew out of the Victorian musical, really. That's like American vaudeville. And it's very silly, it's funny, the audience joins in and cheers or boos or sings or... And it's, you know, got heroes and villains and songs.
So
and in this case, a dancing cow.
And, of course, there's a dancing cow. And this show is, well, the title suggests, it's about pirates.
It is about pirates, yes. Because most pantos, as we call them in Britain, most pantos are based on fairy stories, like Cinderella or Aladdin, something like that. But the American mindset with stories like that is very much Disney. And we don't want people coming expecting to see Disney, and actually they get, well, us. Yeah, so we picked a theme which everyone would sort of be familiar with. Everybody, as soon as you say the word pirate, has a whole host of images of these pretend pirates, which we've had around for a while. And we all know they go, how do they go?
Arr!
They do go, arr! They do, yes. And so does the audience, which is half the point, really. And so that's where we started with this.
So panto comes from a Victorian vaudeville. Yeah. And then it sort of evolved into this Christmas time tradition.
Right.
Yeah, it's where most Brits as kids have their first theatre experience. It's not just a kids' show. It's, you know, the grown-ups love them too. But
yeah,
most,
because the humor's
most people
on...
would have been to one when they're small,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
The humour's on two levels.
Yeah, and part of the joy of a pantomime, and we've always taken every year our kids to see them back in Britain, is that you can... It appeals to all ages because there are sort of innuendos, there's kind of double speak, there's things that are slightly over the kids' heads,
right.
Which the adults kind of find funny, but a lot of it's very much kid-orientated, so they get involved. Quite often kids get taken up onto the stage and they get, you know, asked to do various things, and there's people in the audience quite often from the cast, and so... The kids love it, and as I said, we've taken our kids for many, many years, and they, in fact, our daughter was on the stage when she was two at one of the pantomimes we took her to, telling Mr. Toad off, what a naughty toad he was.
Very naughty toad, she said.
Excellent. So you've been going to pantos for a while now, and so you felt perhaps people in New Jersey needed to see one? Is that
It was a distinct lack of British pantos in New Jersey, and I think that the American sense of humour will take to it hugely, and Americans also are very good at joining in things. If you see like a quiz show, they're always clapping and cheering and chanting and, you know, saying take the deal, don't take the deal, whatever it is, depending on the show. And we thought we would exploit that and get the audience to join in, which is, you know, a large part of the point of a panto. And I think that the audience, well, obviously some Brits will come, I'm sure, but I think that the American part of the audience will hugely enjoy that aspect. It's not something I've seen anything like in American theatre.
I've never seen one. So right. I'm very excited to
And in fact, you were the inspiration behind it.
Well, you know.
You said, let's have a pantomime. And we said, okay, let's have a pantomime.
But you know how you just sort of say these things. Right. You guys actually said, yeah, all right, let's do it. And hey, by the way, Gareth will just write it. He'll just write it. And,
thank you, Liz.
Yeah.
Gareth will write it, yes, thank you.
Oh, and I should mention my husband, Ridley, is directing. I roped him in. Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for directing the show, Rid.
Yes, thank you, Chris.
How did you feel when you were like, really? Well, you want me to direct?
Actually, it was something I decided myself. I was going through the script. The more I was sort of reading through the script, the more I just started to visualize how it would go. And by the end of it, I think I'd kind of convinced myself that I was going to do this. I have directed before, long time ago, but I have directed before. And that was drama. Totally different from this kind of a direction, but as we've been explaining, this is something you kind of grow up with. I mean, I've never actually myself seen a pantomime
growing up in England,
a full proper, like, you know, stage pantomime. I've been in various different versions of one,
right,
like in school, but never actually seen like a proper production of a pantomime before,
right?
So, but it's just one of those things. You just, As a Brit, you just kind of know how they go.
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, it's, you're just born with panto, and it's just something that you kind of go, you know, if you're going to direct it, you kind of know what you're going to be doing.
Yeah.
So
you say that, you know, oh, well, I kind of knew I was going to do it, but now we're in rehearsals twice a week, and it's meetings, and it's, you know, waking up at 4:30 in the morning going, oh my gosh, do we have the sets? Where are we getting that costume from? Where is that happening? Any regrets on taking on the role?
No. Certainly at the beginning, I was a lot more nervous walking in, and everyone, you know, talking to people going in there, and they're like, oh, I don't know my lines. I'm not going to be able to do this. I'm going to have to wing it tonight. And I'm like, I've been winging it for the entire time. So,
well, see, now you know, as you're all very British, you've taken on the one Americanism that helps out a lot, and that is fake it till you make it.
Yes.
So that is a very good American quality, especially when you're doing a show, and we've never done one before, really. Have you put on a show before, Liz, Gareth? Have you ever been involved in a full-scale production like this?
We've done quite a lot of acting and producing and so on ourselves, mostly like Ridley, those sort of drama or more traditional kind of stuff. We've certainly never done a full-scale panto ourselves. But I think the other thing that's been really nice watching the rehearsals and seeing it come together is that it is so much fun for the cast. I mean, they really, once they kind of got over a little bit of what's this about and what are we doing, they really have enjoyed themselves. And so that's one of the nice things, because quite often when you do a production, it can be quite hard work until you actually get it on the stage, and that's when everyone gets the benefit. Whereas with this, you kind of enjoy it before you even get to the point of someone watching it.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the audience is, oh yeah, there's an audience. That's right, we need to. So that's been really nice to watch.
They've also, interestingly, all become British. Because they're now all drinking tea.
Yes.
As opposed to coffee. And in fact, we gave them some British candy, the smaller cast members, the other day. We gave them some Curly Whirlies. There's one for any Brits out there, which they hadn't had. We went all the way to Britain to bring them a Curly Whirly, didn't we?
That was the entire purpose of your trip.
It was. We did fit in one or two things while we were over there getting the Curly Whirly. But the Curly Whirlies were the focus.
Yeah, and I would like to point out that neither Ridley nor myself were recipients of
said Curly
Whirlies. There was none coming our way.
Oh, yes, you did.
No. Oh, no, we did.
Oh, no, we did.
That's another traditional British panto thing that people shout, oh, yes, you did, oh, no, you didn't, repeatedly.
Well, let's go through some of that, because what are some of the traditional aspects of a panto? What makes it like a British panto as opposed to just a play about a fairy tale?
So I guess a couple of things. One is there's always some kind of song which the entire audience sings.
Has to sing.
often multiple times, competing with each other on different sides of the audience.
Let's see if the girls can sing louder than the boys.
Oh, now it's the grown-ups and the kids. And there's usually some kind of song sheet appears and people have to follow the words. And it's always very silly. Sometimes there's actions too, which you have to do. Mm. So the audience has to get up and do various things. Nice. So that's one thing. Another thing that's very traditional is asking the audience to warn one of the characters about something. So quite often one of the characters will say, okay, when you see someone coming to touch that rock or take that treasure chest or look in that box, you must tell me, okay?
And you have to shout out, look out, Widow Dingle Dangle, here comes someone to look at your treasure. Or something.
Yes.
I can imagine the kids getting really into that.
Yeah.
Because as soon as they spot it, they're going to start screaming.
They do, exactly. So that's why, and that's one of the things that we really like about bringing it here, is this whole idea of interaction. Because so much entertainment these days is kind of passive.
It's right.
You know, you're entertained. You know, you watch your videos, your computers, your, you know, this, that, and the other. Whereas this is requires you to participate.
Right.
And we like that. So.
And the thing is, a lot of, I think, you know, sometimes people hear, you're like, oh, it's interactive. Like, oh, girl, I'm not going to do that. You know, but really, once you start screaming and yelling and stuff, you can't help yourself. And it's really fun. And we're screaming and yelling in rehearsal.
Right.
And we don't really need to necessarily, because we all kind of know what we're what's supposed to happen. But we still do it. We're just screaming and yelling. And it's fun. I feel bad for your neighbors because, basically, all these rehearsals are happening in your fitted-up garage.
In
Maplewood, New Jersey. And so all the neighbors within a two-block radius can probably hear us on Mondays and Wednesday nights.
So they know there's a panto called Arr!
Yes.
On.
Because everybody's screaming it out of the back of your garden. Yes. Ridley, what's been your favorite part of doing the show?
I think my favorite part so far has been pretty much like working with this cast. This cast has been extraordinary, considering, I mean, it's 99% Americans, most of which have never seen a panto before. I have never even heard of it. A lot of people who are very sort of, you know, some of them had definitely seen them. Some of them had been to England, saw them when they were there, heard about them. Some were just interested in the concept of it. And some of the kids were just, we like Harry Potter and we want to try out our British accents. And, so the cast have been amazing, and there's a lot of people who, you know, it's all amateurs, and they're all, you know, they're giving it, you know, the old 110%, especially on the accent side. There's some amazing accents coming out.
There are.
There
really are some. there are some good accents here in town.
And it's, you know, there's a lot of people that are going to be up on that stage that people aren't, that the audience aren't going to realize aren't actually British.
Right.
Which I'm very happy with.
Well, thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate having you here and being on the show.
Thank you for having us. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I'm waving now.
That's the mime part of the interview.
To learn more about this play, visit us on our website at justimagineiting.com.
Maybe you don't believe in the supernatural.
Oh, no, no. I've seen a thing or two. Death lies before us as we sail to the Fountain of Youth. Zombies, mermaids, Blackbeard.
Kill them all!
The novel that inspired Pirates of the Caribbean, On Stranger Tides. On Stranger Tides is Tim Power's great Disneyland ride through pirates, puppeteers, treasure, and a thrill-a-minute action that carries on from the start. On Stranger Tides follows the exploits of Jack Shandy, who travels to the New World after the death of his puppeteer father to confront his uncle, who has apparently made off with a family fortune. During the voyage, he befriends Beth Herwood, and her father, Benjamin Herwood, an Oxford professor. They arrive at their destination. Their ship is waylaid by Blackbeard and his band of pirates. With the help of his professor and his assistant, the captain is killed, and Shandy is pressed into piracy and sorcery as Blackbeard searches for the Fountain of Lost Youth. Jack Shandy must stop the evil plot and save Beth Herwood.
Chandanyak was dizzy and couldn't take a deep breath. Time seemed to have slowed. No, it was just that each event was suddenly distinct, no longer part of a blended progression. Beth screamed. The burst of smoke from the pistol muzzle churned forward another yard. The seagull squawked in renewed alarm and flapped upward. The dropped saber spun across the deck, and the brass knuckle guard of it whacked against Chandanyak's ankle. He bent down and picked up the weapon. Then, without having consciously decided to, he was himself rushing at the pirate chief, and though his legs were pounding and his arm was keeping the heavy blade extended in front of him, in his mind, he was deftly rocking the stick and crosspiece and making the Mercutio marionette, which dangled from them, spring toward the Tybalt marionette in the move his father had always called coupe and flèche. Davy, startled and amused, tossed the spent pistol to a companion and, stepping back, drew his rapier and relaxed into the en garde crouch. Taking the final stride, Chandanyak almost thought he could feel the upward yank of the marionette string as he quickly twitched his point over the other man's sword and extended it again in Davy's inside line. And he was so used to the Tybalt puppet's answering lateral parry that he was almost too quick in letting his saber drop under this real, unrehearsed one. But Davies had believed the feint and made the parry, and in the last instant, the disengaged saber was pointed at the pirate chief's unguarded flank, and Chandanyak let the momentum of his rush drive it in and yank the hilt out of his inexpert grip as he ran past. The saber clattered to the deck, and then for one long moment all motion did stop. Davies, still standing but twisted around by the thrust, was staring at Chandanyak in astonishment, and Chandanyak, empty-handed and tense with the expectation of a pistol ball at any moment and from any direction, held his breath and stared helplessly into the wounded pirate's eyes. Finally, Davies carefully sheathed his sword and, just as carefully, folded to his knees, and the silence was so absolute that Chandanyak actually heard the patter of blood drops hitting the deck. Kill him.
Powers writes action and adventure that Indiana Jones could only dream of. Keeps you reading for the joy of it, says the Washington Post. Tim Powers is the author of over a dozen novels and has received the Philip K. Dick World Fantasy and Locus Awards. He lives in San Bernardino, California. For more information about top-selling titles from this award-winning company, go to blackstoneaudio.com. Tribeca, right next to the narrow, but I'll be hood forever. I'm the new Sinatra. Dancers are made it here. I can make it anywhere. Yeah, they love me everywhere. I used to cap in Harlem. All of my Dominicanos right there up on Broadway. Call me back to that McDonald's. Took them to my stash spot. 560 State Street. Catch me in the kitchen like a Simmons whipping pastry. Cruising down K Street.
Get Behind Me Now, Stay There is a Just Imagine It Inc. presentation and was recorded in the Blackstone Audio Inc. studios in Ashland, Oregon. If you would like more information about this show, or if you or someone you know would like to be featured, please call 541-708-0525 or visit justimagineitinc.com. I'm Maya Seligman.
I'm Sarah Simerson.
And I'm Charlie Stanton, and we like you on Facebook, so be sure to remember to like us on Facebook. So in the meantime, get behind me.
Now stay there.
Still sipping my top, sitting courtside, mixing that skippy hot pot. Yeah, I'm a spiked out, I can trip a referee, tell by my